I'd like to welcome everybody to the USS Hornet and thank everybody for coming tonight to help support the ship. All the proceeds for tonight's talk do go towards the ship as well as a portion of any sales of books. I'd also like to thank Heidi and the Hornet for sharing some historical photos with me that will be seen tonight. There's some very cool photos. So I'm Dr. Pamela Heath. I actually was billed as a psychic, but that's not how I think of myself. I started my career as a physician. And I'd been in private practice for a number of years when I started having psychic experiences and went back to school to try and understand why I was able to do these things that science had taught me were impossible. And I ended up getting a doctorate in psychology called a PsyD, specializing in parapsychology, which is actually a very useful background because you're always dealing with people, whether they're living or dead. I am a full member of the Parapsychological Association. And I've been coming on the ship since 1998 and doing spontaneous investigations since 1996. So one of the interesting things about the ship is I've had about 14 years to see how things have changed. So what we're going to talk about tonight, let me start by asking, how many people were at my talk last year? Not as many as I expected. Okay. How many people have investigated the ship before? Okay, that I expected. How many consider yourselves pretty experienced investigators? You've done a number of investigations. Okay. All right. I don't want to insult anybody. It helps me have a sense of where to pitch things. So I'm going to start by talking about the history of the ship because that helps you to understand what kind of activity is here and why it would be here. I'm also going to talk about the history of the paranormal activity, how it was first reported and how it's changed over the years. The different types of activity that you can see here and the spirits that you'll find on the ship, because there's a much wider range or variety than you normally see in an investigation. We'll also talk about a few of the hot spots if we have time. If you can't see the slides, this is a better projector than last year's by far. I will post them on my website probably within about a week, so if you want to see them again, refresh your mind, you've got an opportunity. It is simply my name, PamelaHeath.com. So we're going to start with the ship. I think probably everybody here knows that this ship was built in World War II. She was really built for battle, so there's a lot of duplication of function on the ship, the two engine rooms, multiple radio rooms, etc. One thing not everyone knows is her keel was originally laid down as the Kearsarge. She was supposed to be the USS Kearsarge. And if you do go down into some of the lower levels, you'll actually still see brass plates that have that name on it. She was renamed the Hornet 2.5 months after the sinking of the CV-8 Hornet at Santa Cruz. Now, the new Hornet launched August 30th, 1943. I mention that date because it is one of the anniversary dates that you will see the spirits here respond to. The ship is actually more crowded on that date. So if you want to jot that down, it's a nice time to come back and visit the ship. She was known as a lucky ship, and there were a number of reasons for this. Kamikaze planes never hit her. One who failed, which they called him Mosogoso, which sounds like a weird name, but in Japanese that means rustling bamboo, was pulled from the water and placed in the brig. Only one torpedo ever touched her side, but it glanced off the hull and did not explode. But someone who was serving in the engine room at the time said it sounded like a giant hammer, you know, hitting a gong. It was very, very loud. Only 14 of the ship's actual crew died during World War II. To me, that's an astonishingly small number, especially since it was like 18 months when she was alone holding the line against the Japanese as the only aircraft carrier that was out in the Pacific. All the others had to go back to port for repairs. Two men, Edward Sherman and James F. Sperry, were killed on the signal bridge by fire from an attacking plane. One was hit in the head, the other in the abdomen. You can see Dave Brown there pointing towards the actual repairs in the bulkhead. See the little patches there? I wonder, is there someone who can turn off some of the lights here to make it a little darker? Some of it? Yes. We won't be going up there today, but that's where two men died, two of the 14. Now, unfortunately, not all the deaths have been due to enemy action. Accidents have also taken their toll. We have immediately above our heads a wood flight deck. And this is the hangar bay. There was a plane that came back, and it hadn't dropped all its payload. It still had a bomb. And when it hit the deck, landing, the bomb exploded. And it blew through the flight deck down into the hangar bay here. And two men were killed. Two men were also killed by drowning, ironically, when a fire extinguisher went off in the hangar bay. This bomb elevator, this is on the third deck, was also the site of another death. And it's probably, if you talk about place memory, which is an old imprint or recording by the living, energetic recording, then this is probably one of the strongest, worst spots in the ship. Anyone who's psychic can pick this spot up, and it is their least favorite spot to stand in the ship. A Jewish sailor also committed suicide in the forecastle. And I know when I first started coming on the ship, this passageway towards the forecastle was a really awful place to walk through. It wasn't very pleasant at all. But most of the ship's deaths were not from the crew. They were from the Hornet's Brave airmen. They lost an average of 1 to 2 planes a day. Out of 147 deaths during the war, 133 were men serving in air groups. So they had a much shorter life expectancy than those on the ship. Now, the Hornet was retrofitted many times. You think about rearranging furniture in your house. They rearranged whole rooms, depending on the need. So, for example, she carried soldiers home when World War II ended. And you can see just the massive crowding of the bunks in the hangar bay. She also fought submarines in the Vietnam War. And at that time, they changed. If any of you have done the regular tours to see where CIC is, that was the CIC that was created for that warfare. The original CIC was down way below decks where it would be safe from kamikaze pilots. The Hornet even plucked the Apollo 11 and 12 astronauts from the sea and put them through quarantine. But the Hornet's luck seemed to run out after the Apollo 13 launch was delayed. The Navy decommissioned her in 1970, and she was sold for scrap in 1994. Things looked very dark for the Hornet. Preparation was already underway to cover her up. You can actually see, like if you go in the diesel area where they've sawed through cables for the decommissioning, and all over the place in the lower decks, like if you do a flashlight tour in some of the areas that haven't been restored yet, you'll see markings for like cut here or take this, and they were already marking her up for what they were going to take from where. But Captain Dodge convinced the Navy to loan him the ship for Fleet Week, and it gave her a breathing space. The Hornet Foundation was formed to rescue she who had served so bravely and saved so many others. In 1995, by the way, this is a great story. If you do any of the tours, you'll hear it, I'm sure, how they saved the ship. It was a lot of humor and dedication and a bit of cleverness, too. They did file a lawsuit against the Navy because the Hornet is a historical monument, and you cannot cut up a historical monument. Besides which, you can't sell a Navy warship to China. So they made a deal. The Navy said, okay, we'll let you have her as a museum if you drop the lawsuit. But the Foundation also had to pay back the scrapper what they paid for the ship. So it ended up being quite expensive, but I think well worthwhile. Nonetheless, the ship was in absolutely terrible shape. There was like, I think I've heard something like 4 inches of pigeon poop just on that hangar bay that you just... floor that you walked on. There was so much to do. But it was then that the Hornet's afterlife really began, and in more ways than one. This, by the way, is a picture somebody sent us. So let's talk about her history of paranormal activity. Oh, by the way, I love this photo. This was taken by Ken Gulley, and this was in the hangar bay. I do not know why more people don't investigate the hangar bay, because there's always activity here. Always, always, always. But what you see is you see where people sit and watch the videos, and they're all sitting watching the videos at the far end of the hangar bay. And there's a figure here. And when Ken took the picture, there was nobody standing there, and there was certainly nobody in uniform standing there. And when he blew up the picture, this is what he saw. And I have to say, she's even talking about it, there's always somebody here in this part of the ship. There are a few paranormal stories from when she was in active service. Not a lot, but a few. One sailor reported seeing a ghost in one of the fire rooms. There's four boiler rooms where they make fresh water out of salt water. And I think he said he saw it inside the smokestack. It's been a while since I heard this story. Another crewman spoke of objects flying around the mess deck. Now, as somebody who is a parapsychologist, my immediate question is, was this somebody who was living, who was stressed out doing poltergeist behavior? Because most mind-matter interaction where objects start flying is due to human beings. It's usually not due to spirits. Or was this due to an upset spirit? You don't know. If I was a betting woman, I would say it was probably a sailor. A former crew member also had an interesting experience where he was with his girlfriend during an open house. This is when the ship was still active duty. And they were standing in the gallery deck outside the war room and heard a voice say, "Over here, over here." 30 years later, people still report hearing that voice. And in fact, the gallery deck is a very haunted area. The ship, you'll also hear other voices. You don't need EVP for this. I mean, you don't need to record it and play it back later. You'll hear it with your ears. You'll hear things like, "Watch your step, sir," or "Watch your step, ma'am." So it's like you're being very polite, you know, trying to make sure you remember to step over the combings. Nonetheless, when they took over the ship, there was no electricity. Volunteers explored the ship by flashlight, and it was a truly dangerous place. Just physically dangerous. Nothing spirit involved. There's asbestos, bad air, peeling lead paint, debris all over the place. Some sections are missing flooring. So if we ask you not to explore on your own and not to go in rooms that we have marked off, please honor that, because there are still unsafe areas in the ship, and we would like to keep you safe tonight and not have asbestos exposure. The volunteers began closing off areas for safety, but they soon ran out of chain. Now, how many have heard this story by Bob Rogers? Anybody? Okay. This is a great story. So they run out of chain, and they jokingly say, "Well, Hornet, why don't you give us some chain?" And they walked back around the corner, and there was a neatly coiled, shiny thing of chain. And they were like, "Wow, I guess we didn't notice that." But they did think it was rather odd, because they'd been coming on board the ship for some months at that point, and they thought they had picked up all the chain that there was to pick up. So they chained off a few more areas, and they ran out of chain again. And just for fun, they said, "Hornet, give us chain." And they walked back around a few corners, and there was a big coil of bright, shiny chain such as they'd never seen on the ship. It didn't look 20 years old. It looked brand new. And they thought, okay. So next time as they're chaining things off, they're making sure that they notice whether there's any chain around, right? They're thinking maybe we just didn't notice. There's no chain. There's no chain. There's no chain. They chain everything off, and they say, "Okay, Hornet, give us chain." And back around the corner, there was chain where they had determined there was none before. And this happened a number of times. So they felt, needless to say, that the Hornet was trying to help them out. Of course, the Hornet spirits, I should say, was trying to help them out. And then they began hearing other things, footsteps. There are a lot of reports of seeing uniformed figures moving around all over the ship. Certainly, what's interesting is there was a case where Bob Rogers and Block, not his name, another fellow who was an ex-Navy SEAL who was very skeptical, and some guys from Coca-Cola who were on the ship, all saw a guy in a 1940s uniform up on the island, up in the Platte Bridge. And they looked at him, and he looked at them like, "What are you doing here?" And then went down the ladder. And I believe it was Alan ran down after them, couldn't find where this person had gone. And, of course, was totally silent, which on a metal ship is very hard to do with footsteps. So it's very interesting how multiple people will see the spirits at the same time, and they seem to be going about their business. They have their jobs to do. They're doing their work. They often are helping us. By the way, there is a lot of Peanuts artwork, and if you haven't seen some of the artwork on the ship, it is just phenomenal. This is one I don't think that many people see. It's where Snoopy is flying back to the Hornet. He's getting ready to land. You can see a little tiny Hornet to the right there. And a Roadrunner outside one of the fire rooms. So relatively few spirits here appear to be stuck in the classic sense. We'll talk about that more later. Most of them died elsewhere. Some even died on earlier Hornets, not this Hornet. But all of them pretty much returned by choice to the ship that they love. So they come back for the same reason the living come back. They just really like this place. Another, unfortunately, very poor shape of Peanuts cartoon there. The work to preserve the ship continues. there's much more to do. The spirits are still with us, still helping. And they serve under a chain of command. They tend to view us, the volunteers, as fellow crew members, which can be good or bad depending on how they like you as a fellow crew member. They may try and make you seasick, or they may be helpful or respectful. I think this ship is very unusual in terms of compared to other places you'll investigate, partly because there's multiple sightings of spirits at the same time. You know, it's very rare. Usually with sightings, you'll have one person who sees it and others don't. In this, you might have several people at the same time see the spirit. There are reports of the ship herself having a kind of spirit, which is called a thought form, and this is an artificially created consciousness created by the belief of the living. So because all the sailors would talk to the Hornet and believe in the Hornet and say, Hornet, keep us safe. Hornet, protect us. Hornet, take care of us. That this sort of vague consciousness started to form, and it was something I was sort of aware of when I first started coming on the ship. Less so now. There are, as I said, few stuck spirits. Most places where you do haunting investigations, the majority of the spirits are stuck. Not true here. There is a whole chain of command. This is very useful. There was a spirit who was harassing somebody, a woman, because he thought she was pretty hot. She, however, did not like being touched the way he was touching her. We complained to the captain. The captain set down the edict. The harassment stopped. Very useful to have that chain of command. There are also regular reports of spirits interacting with the environment. I'll show you a picture of it later. Up in the crow's nest, there have been some garbage can lids that have gone flying. I know when we first started coming on board the ship, dog wrenches would go flying. Coffee pots have gone flying. This doesn't make people happy when they only have one coffee pot either, because if it breaks, that's it. There's also a possible time slip that was reported once. Now, time slip is where you have two time zones that sort of abut. So it's like the present with 1943 next to each other, and each can see the other. And this guy woke up in the middle of the night, and the stateroom he was in was entirely furnished like 1940. Even saw a guy, the uniform, everything. And then it sort of stopped. This ship is equally active whether day or night. Okay? It doesn't matter when you come on board. I know one time when I saw a ghost with my eyes, not just mentally or psychically, it was actually 8 o'clock in the morning. I was coming in to help with a flashlight tour. My flashlight died. I'm thinking, crap, you know, shaking the flashlight, trying to get it working. Glance up. I look at it, and there's this guy in this green flight suit climbing into a helicopter. And then he disappears, and my flashlight comes back on. So day or night. There are reasons, though, which I'll get into later, why you'll be able to sense them more at night. Now, because this hornet has been studied a long time, we do know that the activity here has changed in terms of location. So while some spots have always been active, others have become inactive or cycled sort of back and forth. The types of interaction have changed, whether due to growing sophistication or boredom. It's like, I'm tired of those EMF meters. Give me something different to play with. The identity of the spirits here has changed, and which spirits will be in what location. They do shift around. And again, because they aren't stuck, you can ask them to come to you. You don't have to go to them. What I found when I first started coming on the ship, as I mentioned, I did find a thought form. I was shocked. I had never encountered that before in my career. I also found place memory. Now, there's different names for this, but basically, living human beings put out a kind of energy that can be imprinted on the environment or actively recorded into the environment. And certain things like repetition make it more common. But basically, everywhere in the entire planet has place memory. It's just some areas are going to be stronger than others. I also found a huge variety of spirits at different stages of the afterlife. Some were stuck, not many, but a few. Then there were visitors who were either coming back because part of their life was lived here and they're doing their life review, and so they're sort of, it makes it easier to sort of go through the memories if they're actually physically here. There were also tourists, spirit tourists, just coming back to enjoy the ship and you also saw them with reunions. So those anniversary dates, the date I mentioned before when the ship was commissioned, the other huge date I would really recommend to anyone who really wants to feel spirits in the Hangar Bay is Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th. It's huge. There'll be like 300-400 spirits in here, all with their sea bags. It's amazing. You'll also see guides here, which is sort of unusual to have this many spirit guides. They finish their life review, they're wiser, they've been sort of debriefed, shall we say, in the afterlife, and they're here for spiritual work. Now, how do you tell the difference between something like place memory that's an old recording and spirits? Place memory does not interact with you. It's like a video tape or a DVD. You might start the movie in different spots, but the same plot plays out every time, no matter how many times you put the disc in your player. Okay? Doesn't change. So, with spirits, they may interact. If they give you this when they see you, this is clearly not place memory. You know, they're interacting with you, they're aware of you, and their behavior can vary. And I have to say, for the ladies, we do have some romantic ghosts on board, or spirits. I've had my hand kissed. It's been there. Some of them are pretty romantic. In terms of the place memory here, it's really not as negative as you would expect for a warship. There's a lot of busyness, a lot of sense of rushing around, a lot of working. But it's not really what I would call negative, except for the bomb elevator, which is really yucky. And then outside the mailroom, there's a whole sense of a lot of guys waiting, with anticipation, sometimes disappointment, but they must have had a lot of emotion when they were waiting to see if they had gotten any mail. Now, one of the things I talk about in Handbook to the Afterlife is that there's about 10 phases spirits go through, the first four of which involve transition. So just like during your lifetime, as you grow up from childhood, some of you may have heard of Piaget stages or Erickson stages where you go through different phases, you do the same thing in the afterlife. You have different lessons you have to learn and accomplish to go to the next stage. And of course, just like human beings during life, sometimes you may go back and forth, you may skip a stage, go back to a stage, repeat it a few times. It's the same in the afterlife. But knowing what stage it is can tell you how best to make contact, how to approach them, what will work, what won't, and even whether you want to bother moving them on. So these are the stages as they are. The first one is recognizing death, which honestly, you would think this is a no-brainer, but some spirits can't figure it out. I would say most of the time when I encounter a stuck spirit, we'd say about over half the time, they don't know they're dead. Especially if they were skeptical when alive and they didn't believe in an afterlife and they feel like they're alive, so they must be alive. And why is everybody ignoring them? It's sort of like the Sixth Sense movie with Bruce Willis. I was probably the only one who guessed from the get-go that he was dead. Separating from the body. That's cultural. Some people, some cultures feel that you're tied to your body for a certain number of days. And in the afterlife, your belief kind of rules you in the sense that you have a lot of self-fulfilling prophecy. So if I really believe I'm tethered by some kind of silver cord to the body, I will be tethered by a silver cord to the body, and vice versa. Where we see most of the stuck spirits here, and there aren't a lot of them anymore, is before they meet their spirit helpers. One of the problems you have in the afterlife is that you no longer have a physical body. You don't have eyes. You don't have any way to perceive the environment around you other than mentally or psychically. And it takes spirits a little while to kind of adjust to that and figure out how to become aware of what's around them. And a lot of times that's where they need the most help, is to be told that there's others around them trying to help them. There's moving through levels, reuniting with loved ones. Recovering appears to be a big part of the spirits here, and I personally think that's part of why they decided to help this ship become a museum, in addition to the fact they just love the ship. They do use it as a way station to help military dead recover from their deaths. We also see a certain number of spirits that come back to visit the living, and coming back for reunion, judging the lifetime. That's why I have them in red, and here doing spiritual work. So if you know what has to be accomplished, it also tells you how they're likely to have become stuck if they are stuck, and how to get them unstuck. Most of the time, all you need is to give them information. You don't need to be psychic to do that. You know, for some reason, someone who mentally thinks they're alive can see the living still. They just can't see the other spirits around them trying to help them. And you just have to sort of point that out. Also, for those who do a lot of investigations, I like to point out that not all spirits need help. Guides and visitors, especially if they're doing their life reviews, are just fine as they are. Leave them alone. Let them do their job. So again, stuck spirits, they don't realize they're dead. They're often confused. They may be afraid of moving on, especially if they believed in hardcore heaven and hell. And they can't emotionally let go of their lives. We had a purser spirit down on the third deck that was like that. He was very possessive about his ship store. And he didn't want to leave. He was someone from 1947. That's about all I got from him. Or they simply don't know how to do it. A lot of times you'll see them repeating what they did in life. You may see them swabbing the deck or, you know, just hanging out on their bunks. They're usually aware of where they are, but not who is around them. Not always even you, the living. One problem with this is they can unwittingly influence the living emotionally. So if you suddenly feel really, really sad, and you're like, wait a minute, nothing to be sad about. I would say, I'll sort of psychically look around, I'll realize there's a spirit near me that's sad. It's not trying to make me feel sad. It's just I'm picking up on that emotion from them. And I do think stuck spirits need help. Their appearance tells you how they think of themselves. So if you see somebody who is 8 years old, it doesn't mean that's necessarily when they died. That's how they feel that day. The next day, they might look 95. They're typically found where they lived, not where their bodies are buried. And that's why we see so many here. They really loved the ship. They had a great time here. And they end up being wherever they think of. So that they think of here, they're here. Most of the stuck spirits were not in areas open to the public, and I have to say that one of the reasons some of the guides were here was to help spirits move on. There was a chaplain spirit here who was helping the suicide spirit in the fo'c'sle move on. The brig. Now, I mentioned that guy who got fished from the water. A lot of people reported feeling like there was a Japanese spirit in the brig when they first started coming. And I do wonder if it was mostly ghosts. So he was causing problems. So initially people told him they would help him, and then they never got around to it, and he got angry. And he started tripping people. And part of this is a cultural issue, that the Japanese have a different view of what happens if you're a ghost haunting a place. They believe if you're a ghost haunting a place, that you are by definition evil. Because if you were a good spirit, you would be an ancestor spirit, and you'd be following your descendants around, looking out after them. So one of the things I did is I learned Japanese instruments, and I invited his ancestor spirits to grant him forgiveness for failing as a kamikaze, and invite him to join them as a fellow ancestor spirit, and take care of descendants. And we got him finally moved on. You may or may not still feel a little of the old residual energy from that place. I don't know. The scholar is an interesting case because it was another guy who was really possessive of his space. He was a cook there. And for the longest time, he was causing trouble because he would try and drive people out of his space. And he's the one who made a coffee pot go flying and broke the coffee pot and was doing other things. And I went and yelled at him a few times. And what was funny about him is he decided to promote himself. And he moved up to the Admiral's pantry, which I thought was great. You know, at least he's moving forward. There was also a young spirit here, which was stuck here for about 5-6 years. It was a very sad man who had been totally freaked out by the war. He was terrorized by everything, even things that weren't meant to be terrorizing. Things that, sort of semi-hazing type thing that they sometimes do crossing the equator, things like that. And I actually used to take people up there and let them feel him, because you could sort of feel it like a tingly feeling where he was. And he wouldn't move. So, you know, most of the spirits here, they'll go off. They'll leave if they don't want you to be there. But he wouldn't leave his bunk. And I kept saying, okay, people will stop feeling you if you'll move on to the light. You want to move on to the light yet? He'd go, nope. 5 years. He finally decided he was tired of people feeling him. He moved on. But there are other spirits in the junior officer's board that come and go. There are also shadow figures that have been seen in the fo'c'sle, as well as blue balls of light, and I'm not quite sure what those are. In terms of, this was a picture that was sent to Hornet. It's an interesting, I am probably the world's biggest cynic about photos, but this is an interesting photo because that blue ball looks almost 3D. And I don't know what it is. Is it an artifact? That's your son. That's your picture. Hey, good. I couldn't get your name. All right. Well, contact me, and if you want the slide to continue or not. Really cool picture. Now, the visitor spirits, as I've mentioned, they finish their transitions to the afterlife life and return, whether part of their life of you, to visit the living. My parents are both dead. I see them regularly. Grandparents are always visiting people. I think that's a common spirit I see around people, is their grandparents, if they're dead. They will come here to meet others or to see a ceremony. You have some of these 40s dances. Let me tell you, the spirits love that. They'll also come, this is hysterical, to enjoy the exhibits of the ship. Now, I didn't see this the first several years, but as we've gotten more and more ship exhibits for other ships besides ours, we're starting to get spirits coming back to see our exhibits for ships that they served on. Just tourists. But these guys are aware of their surroundings, are able to interact. They may choose not to interact, but they can if they want to. Now, the guides, they've completed their transitions and life reviews. And because of this debriefing, they may be much wiser and they may have different personalities than when they were alive. And that's important. Somebody who's stuck, they're going to have the same belief system. So if you're going to work with them, you have to think about what that belief system is and work within it. But they have a purpose in being here, often spiritual work. They can interact, they come and go, and they are certainly the vast majority of what you'll see on the ship. Now, the first spirit guide I ever saw was the Admiral and his XO, and actually, behind me is what you're seeing in that photo. And he was standing right here in a white uniform. The first few years I was coming on board the ship, he was here very, very often. We almost never see him anymore. But most people felt he was Admiral J.J. Clark, who was actually the first admiral for the Hornet Task Force in World War II. And he was pretty well-liked. He had a bit of a temper, but he had worked his way up from the lowest possible level and rank all the way to admiral. So he knew everybody's job because he'd done everybody's job. And there were times when, because of his ulcer disease, he'd be up at 3 o'clock in the morning, he'd see some sailor trying to swab a deck, he'd go, he'd take the mop from him and say, no, this is how you do it, right? You know, and he'd show him how to do it easier and better. So he was actually really liked, and he was practically loved and adored after he got rid of the first captain who was universally hated. And if you get the book in the ship store on the history of the ship, you'll see why the first captain was hated, and frankly, I would have liked this guy, too, for getting rid of the guy. I also had a lot of experiences in the ship's engine room. Now, this is an area that sort of comes and goes in activity, and I'm not sure how much of my experience was due to the fact that I am the granddaughter of a ship's engineer, and they recognize that. The first time I came in the ship, I was just surrounded by the most amazing, unconditional love. But there were originally about 5 guys regularly hanging out in this level, and one guy who was hanging out, his name was Harrison, in the level below them. And one of the guys, I guess, was of Swedish descent, because I used to jokingly call him Olaf. It wasn't his name, but that was the way they teased him. And he was from the CV-8 Hornet. He wasn't from this Hornet. I do a lot of painting in this place, and I always invited them to pick up a brush, and they never did. The Fantail was also one of the sites of one of my most humorous experiences. Up on the second deck here, there were 2 metal chairs, flat, facing the bulkhead. And it was getting towards sunset, and I was talking to a psychic. The ship's psychic at the time was Stosh Margaret Murray. And we were chatting, and we glanced up about 30 seconds after we noticed the chairs were flat, and both chairs were at an exact 45-degree angle, perfectly angled to catch the sunset. No one had come and gone up there. The chairs, metal on metal, had made no sound. And she was like, did you see that? I was like, did you see that? Yeah. We both sort of stared. Pretty funny. I guess they like the sunsets here. I mentioned seeing a ghost at 8 o'clock in the morning. It was getting into this helicopter here. However, there's also another green helicopter, the hub at the far end, that used to have a lot of activity. A lot of people reported seeing a guy in a green place coming and going from there. The crow's nest, this is where volunteers hang out, and it's actually right behind me here. And a lot of garbage can lids going flying. I'm not quite sure what they're upset about. I think what's really special here compared to most places I've been is that they really do have a structured chain of command. They continue their tasks as crew. I mean, they have a whole crew. They think of the living as fellow crew members. They've been seen in groups. They change in numbers for special events. And I think they give that newly dead a place to recover on the ship, especially in the sick bay. And I think it's one of the reasons the sick bay always feels pretty busy. Now, what has changed in the last 14 years is that the thought form is weaker, if not gone. I almost never sense it anymore. Many stock spirits have been moved on, some by the ghost chaplain, some by myself or other psychics. When I move a spirit on from the ship, I always give them the option to return if they want to, once they've gone to the light, because why not? If they want to do their spiritual work here, there's plenty of a support system for it. The spirit crew also seems to rotate in and out, just like they would have if they were a living ship. It's kind of interesting. And the Admiral is seldom seen at this point. Now, there has been a change in what spirits are willing or able to interact with, and I'm not sure how much of this is boredom or sophistication. Initially, there was a lot of hair getting tugged, people being touched, backpacks lifted, dog wrenches, those metal pipe-like things, that's what they look like, they're used to help close hatches or open hatches. They were getting thrown, they make a huge banging sound when they hit the deck. People were being pulled off bunks all the time, especially in the staterooms. Pretty hysterical. I guess or they were feeling like we were being sat on. There were cold spots. Oh, and being made seasick if they didn't like you. If they don't like you, I have a colleague. They don't like him. I haven't told him that. But they make him seasick if he comes on, even though there's no movement on the ship. They want him to go away. After that, we saw a period when there was a lot of playing with EMF meters, electromagnetic field meters, which is not really a way of directly measuring ghosts, but seems to be an indirect way of sensing whether a ghost is there, maybe. And we also were getting words from an obelisk. It's something that uses electromagnetic field variations and a sort of randomized dictionary to give out words and sounds. But last year, they were just amazing about turning flashlights on and off. To on command, you could get them to answer questions. Flash once for yes, twice for no. No flashing means I don't know if they're able to do anything. So never make no is no, no light. It has to be two positive actions. One for yes, one for no. And what I would like to say is when you are investigating tonight, feel free to experiment. We have set up some things with them. We have done some preparation with them. We asked them what they wanted to be able to be active. Anyone want to guess what they wanted? John Wayne movies. We've been playing. Okay? They also wanted unopened decks of cards. I guess they're afraid that there's going to be cheating. You can buy decks of cards, by the way, in the ship store if you want to play with that. Now, there are some areas that are almost always active. Sick bay is one of them. I see a mix of recovering spirits and guides taking care of them there. The forecastle and bow, guides and guides doing their life review mostly. Hangar bay here, again, guides and visitors. The small laundry is near the sick bay. There's almost always one spirit there. He's a tall, skinny guy. And anytime I ask him, like, why are you here? It's like, he just really loved laundry. I have never met a guy who loved laundry as much as he did. He really liked where he worked. The engine room comes and goes, but, you know, mostly guides or people doing their life review. Fantail, a number of different spirits, including a chief who's seen in a chief's hat, like to hang out and play cards on the Fantail. Now, I mentioned some areas they kind of go inactive, and they've recently become active again. The forecastle, the CPS mess, which is directly below us, and the Admiral's area. Now, there's less activity at the Junior Officers Board. See, there used to be three spirits who hung out in the women's bathroom. They wouldn't go in the stalls, ladies, but they liked to watch women put on lipstick and pull up pantyhose. However, they figured out that women don't do that anymore, and they got bored after a while. So then they decided to promote themselves to the Junior Officers Board. So they sort of come and go from there. The brig, I really don't feel any activity to speak of now anymore. The scullery, the guy moved up. Main engine room, again, it's less, but it may be changing again. And the woman's bathroom is pretty safe, ladies. So this is a junior's officer board where you'll see a number of spirits hang out here, different names. I tell people, if you're not dealing with a stuck spirit, there's not a lot of advantage to getting hung up on names because most spirit guides don't care what you call them. You know, you can call them Pearly and Mo if you want to. Woman's bathroom. Never active. Certain areas have never been active, and I think there's reasons for that in terms of what was going on at the ship. I don't see anybody in the radio rooms or crypto. And those were sort of off-limits areas, and it seems like the spirits still keep them off-limits, or think of them as off-limits. The Vietnam era CIC, you would think there are spirits in there. I've never seen one in there. Special weapons locker where they kept the nuclear weapons, never seen anyone in there. Dental. Now, somehow this doesn't surprise me that I've never seen a spirit there. Main laundry. Nobody goes in there. I don't know why. Tonight's locations we're going to be going to include the birthing area, sick bay, the marine head and birthing. A lot of stories in the marine head. Some of the spirits there are picky, too. There were some guys who used to go to sleep there. And they'd wake up and their stuff would be gone in the morning. And they'd be like, where'd my stuff go? And somebody would have neatly put it away, shot, shoes carefully placed side by side inside a locker. And they woke up once in the middle of the night and they'd be, oh, sloppy so-and-so's of this spirit. So I guess they've got some picky marines still there. A lot of people have seen somebody in the bathroom too. Shadow figures or guys in uniform coming and going from there. We'll be going in Gigun, which hadn't been opened before. Folks was sort of an old favorite. And up on the gallery deck, which has always been pretty haunted, the ready room. This first birthing area we're going to be going to used to be a sick bay. Remember how I say how they move things around and that makes a difference? It's now birthing, but it was the original sick bay. And it still has some place memory from there, and there are spirits that seem to be moving around there right now. I should mention, I made a tour a couple days ago with Heidi so we could make sure we wouldn't take you anywhere inactive. So these are all currently active places. Gigunk is where they used to buy ice cream and play cards. And you would think this would be a happy place, but it's not too happy. There must have been a fight or something in there. The picture on the lower side is how it looked before we restored it. If you're going to buy cards, playing cards, and see if you can get them to knock them over, things like that, play with them, this would be the place to do it. This is where they typically play cards. Small laundry, I've just sort of thrown in if you don't want to do the regular sick bay. There didn't used to be activity in this exam room, but recently there's been a lot of activity, and it seems to be somebody who was not pleased with his care because he keeps throwing the mattress off the bed. This is the sick bay office. There used to be a guy called Bernie or Bernard who was sort of running the sick bay and taking care of people, and he would do things on command. If you asked him to make your EMF meters or other equipment go off, he would usually do it. Great nice spot. The medical ward, last time I was there, was very full. Now, they may have moved a few of those spirits out, but what usually happens, more than when Halloween is coming, that people are going to be going through. So if you have anybody who gets too freaked out by visitors, move them out. But what they bring in is pranksters who like to play. And what they wanted was board games. I don't know if Heidi was able to get them the board games, but I think it'd be a lot of fun to see if they would move Parcheesi pieces or things like that. They wanted board games. I asked them all what they wanted. The marine birthing, again, quite an active area. And the marine head is across the hall from it. Hangar bay, I don't know why more people don't investigate here. It's always busy, busy, busy. Fo'c'sle. Now, one of the things we may see here is plasma sometimes. Plasma balls are a natural phenomenon. They are blue light. They don't look like what that was in the photo, though. I don't have that 3D look. It's so amazing. A lot of activity. A lot of people have seen spirits up on the catwalks here. And the shadow figures I talked about would be if you were standing behind me, you know, behind where the chains were, where that catwalk was. Gallery deck, very, very haunted in the hallways. And also in, I think we'll be going in the war room. It was outside this room where you heard the over here sounding. the ready room. We have set up something special for you there. We thought it might be fun to see if we could get them. I'm going to go to the end and come back. We set up energy wheels. We set up one decorated for Marines, Marine images, one decorated for Navy, and we're going to ask them to have a competition and see who can spin their wheel the best, Marines or Navy men. Seem like a little competition to get things going. Let's go back. So feel free to use that. Now, I want to mention more activity gets reported and not at night, not because there is less, more activity, but because there's less noise from the environment, and your level of sensitivity varies depending on your state of consciousness. And we all change our state of consciousness. Dreaming is an altered state of consciousness. Falling off to sleep is an altered state of consciousness. Waking up is an altered state of consciousness. All these altered states of consciousness, you're more psychic. So you can take advantage of that. If you're tired, great! You're more apt to feel something. And I think that's why so many things get reported on the overnights where people go off to sleep, because you've got more periods where you're sort of going in and out of those altered states. It can also be easier to pick up place memories certain times of the year, like anniversaries, and under certain weather conditions. Parapsychologists have no idea why that is. I would suggest using focus items that might interest them, and I'll show you an example of something I bought, I'm going to play with tonight, that I got at the ship store. It's beautiful anyway. This is called a bassoon pipe, and it's actually a whistle. And since there are a number of sailors on the ship who were at that level who might have enjoyed the pipe, I'm going to see if any of them want to blow the pipe for me. Now, we're going to probably be playing some of this because hearing the different calls tends to get the spirits here very excited. They actually pay attention to it. So be playing some of those just before the investigation. If any of you want to buy these and see if you can get them to blow the whistle, it's a cool memento anyway. I'd recommend it. The cards is a possibility. There's also little helicopter things with rotors. I checked the rotors out. They move pretty freely. You might see if you can get the spirits to turn the rotors, if you don't have anything with you to try and get them to play with. I say go for Navy Marine competitions wherever you can. Also, one of the things that disturbs me on TV is I see a lot of bullying behavior. Provocation is what people will talk about. That doesn't work with spirit guides. They simply leave. They have no interest in dealing with bullies. And what I would suggest is entice them, invite them, be playful. Then you're more apt to get some good stuff here. So in the ship store, the bassoon's whistle, we've also got flashlights. We're supposed to have gotten in the flashlight type that they like to play with and turn on and off on command to answer yes, no questions. You may want to try the cards. I also highly recommend The Gray Ghost, the story of the aircraft carrier Hornet. It's a great read, and it tells you a lot of the history and some very interesting tidbits about what happened. I also have a couple books if you're interested in how spirits move through the afterlife. Handbook to the Afterlife is a great primer, and the last third of it talks about how you can work with spirits. Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife is the older book, which is good if you're dealing with spirits of suicides. I've actually used this with suicide spirits. You know, some spirits, they just like to have books. They like guides. It's sort of like a map to tell them what to do. So I go to suicide. For some reason, if I have a physical book in my hand, I can see the physical book. I'll imagine an astral copy that I hand them, and I say, here, read this. It explains everything. This works. You know, use what works. So that's the end of the slideshow. And see how we are for time. About an hour, good. Can we turn the lights back on? Lights. Loose. Spirits or anyone? What I was going to do is, since I do have some books over in the store and people sometimes like to browse the store, is I will sort of mosey that way and answer questions. And there are some pre-signed books there, but if you want a personally signed book, I can do that. I also recommend, since there are not a lot of good bathrooms to use during the investigation, that anyone who wants to use a bathroom before we break into groups, this is a great time to do that also. And the ship store will be fully open, including neat hats and other items if there's anything you guys want. Okay? So questions, I'll be taking them over at the ship store, if that's okay. All right. Happy investigating.